Welcome to the Sudden Victory Podcast presented by Wide Right Natty Light. I'm Sam Phillips here with Jacob England. After a few weeks off, we had our break. Wrestlers have had their break, but it's time to get back into it, isn't it, Jacob?
Yes, I'm ready to get back into things. I don't know about you, Sam, but as much as I love my break, I like to actually be busy.
Yeah, for sure. And those holiday tournaments were not doing it for me. A couple Cyclones in action at the Soldier Salute over the break as well, but no starters there. And so not really all that much to talk about with that. If you want to get into the nitty gritty of it, there were some good performances by some guys that won't be in the lineup this year, but potentially, hopefully will be in the future and can keep trending in their improvement that they're showing. But let's get down to these collegiate duels that happened, gosh, 2-3 weeks ago now that we have not talked about yet. Since we previewed them, Iowa State went down to Nashville and posted 3 really solid wins.
Yeah. Those collegiate duels weren't no joke. I took a little hiatus from everything. I didn't even get to hardly see the bowl game. That tells you how busy I was. I had a garage project that I had to get done. And let's just say I got 75% of it done. That just tells you how busy I've been. But I definitely checked on Twitter and checked on some of the videos, and they were looking pretty solid.
Yeah. So they started off that tournament with a duel against Pitt, the Pitt Panthers, of course, that team that Iowa State had a phenomenal duel against at the beginning of 2023. And they win that duel 21-14, taking 6 out of the 10 matches. Collegiate duels did not have Casey Swiderski in the lineup. He will also be out this weekend and potentially will not be back for that. I think right now they're looking at maybe that Oklahoma State weekend for when he'll come back. I still haven't heard what exactly is the injury there for Swiderski, but hopefully it's something where he can come back and be ready. In the meantime, Zach Redding has been a really solid guy to fill in there. But let's start 125. Kyson Tarakina gets a ranked win, so that was a good start for him on the day. Evan Frost beats a tough freshman in Vince Santaniello there, 9-6. And then Anthony Etchemendia with probably the win of the duel, majoring Cole Matthews, who was ranked number 1 for most of last season.
Yeah, the times I did get to see, I did see Etchemendia just absolutely going to town on Cole Matthews. And I thought that was kind of like the impressive win, like the win that Etchemendia needed to really, show that, hey, I'm here and I mean business.
Yeah, absolutely. Cole Matthews kept trying to go body lock, did it twice, I think, and Etchemendia scored on both of them. So obviously a position that Cole Matthews felt really comfortable in and was just outclassed by Anthony Etchemendia there in that position and in that match. Zach Redding stepped in at 149, not his ideal weight, basically bumping up a weight and bumping up 2 weights from where he was last season. And he takes a loss there to Finn Solomon, who's certainly a national qualifier type guy for the Pitt Panthers. He might get a rematch there later in the year if Casey Swiderski's not back by the time Pitt rolls into Hilton Coliseum. But then at 157, Cody Chittum got things righted with a major decision. David Carr got a major decision over number 8, Holden Heller. And then it went a little sideways for the Cyclones there for a minute. MJ Gaetan dropped a 1-point match to Luca Augustine. Will Feldkamp was upset and actually majored by Reese Heller. And then at 197, Julian Broderson was the other Cyclone starter who did not make the trip down to Nashville. It was the Iowa City Regina Project, Rowan Udell, who got beat by a really good young Max Stout there for the Pitt Panthers. But younger Bastida finished it off with a win for the Cyclones. 6-3 over Dayton Pitzer, who is a top 10 opponent there. So younger Bastida had a phenomenal collegiate duels, has really kept it rolling. Another tournament went by without him giving up a takedown.
I think he is going to have one heck of a run coming to the national tournament. I mean, time and time again, he goes against these top quality opponents, and has his way. I mean, how many times has he gotten into the high crotch, you know, going as hard as he can, then start turning the corner, and those heavyweights just cannot keep up with his speed. It's unbelievable. I'm really impressed with Bastida and the way he's progressed in this heavyweight division.
Yeah, it's been really fun to watch him. We'll get to the big one this weekend, but he's going to have a fun matchup for sure. Then the Cyclones had a little bit different duel against Little Rock, because Little Rock, of course, is only in their fifth year as a program, I think, and they're starting to turn a corner there, the Trojans, but they're not on Iowa State's level right now. Maybe like Dresser's first year, I think this would have been a competitive duel. They've got a lot of fight, but Iowa State's just on a completely different level from Little Rock right now, as they should be, frankly. But Ethan Perryman gets to go at 125 and got a nice win there. Really the blemish on this performance was Evan Frost, got tech fault in the first period, 15-0 by Nasir Bailey. And, Nasir Bailey, true freshman, you know, top 20 overall recruit, biggest recruit in program history for the Little Rock Trojans. And a certified dude, but that's not the result you want. What happened there was Bailey gets the first takedown, and then he got to Frost's wrists and just wrist tilted him over and over and over and racked up a whole bunch of points. I think if you look at this result and you look at some of Frost's losses last season, that seems to be one vulnerability that Evan Frost has and is still figuring out. Obviously, he's shorted up a little bit. If this is the first time that I can remember that he got turned. I know he gave up some back points in that CKLV finals, but he kind of put himself to his back. But now that it's a known vulnerability, he's got to be, you know, aware that guys are going to try to target that, Jacob.
Yeah. I mean, the way I used to take care of that when I wrestled was just not getting into that position. I know it's hard to say, but for instance, getting wrists, yes, that's a tough situation to be in, but at the same time, you counter that move and you counter from them getting into your wrist, you know, grabbing their hand or doing something that will take away their power, their skill set, I would say. I'm sure the coaching staff is well aware of it, and I'm sure they're going to look into it and say, okay, Evan, you know, this is the thing that you need to shore up. Let's work on something, or let's do a preventative action in order for you to not get in this situation again.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, you know, that's definitely one of those losses that you can learn a lot from there for Evan Frost. At 141, Anthony Etchemendia continued his strong day with another major decision. And then Zach Redding got his first win up at 149 over a really strong freshman in Kyle Dutton, but Zach Redding got the 9-1 major. Cody Chittum got a ranked win over Matt Bianchi there at 157 in a bit of a chippy match. 165, it was Connor Ooten who got the call. David Carr rested that match, and Ooten took out Joseph Bianchi 10-7. So a really good win for Ooten. I really hope Iowa State can get him in the lineup at some point, and it's cool to see him step up in these duels. MJ Gaitan got a major. Will Feldkamp pinned Tristan Wills, who's been ranked in the past. And then at 197, it was Caleb Helgeson bumping up to take on, at the time, number 4, Stephen Little. And he gave up the major decision. So, tough there, but actually, I don't think it was Helgeson. I think WrestleStats got this wrong. It was, I forget. It was one of the other kids there at 197, mm-hmm. I think. I can't remember the name all of a sudden. It wasn't Carlucci. It wasn't Hagerty. Someone else. Wasn't Villascusa. Maybe it was Helgeson.
No, I think it may have been Villascusa. I remember Villascusa.
Well, Villascusa's hurt, so I don't
think. Okay.
Anyways, young kid got beat there by a top 5 guy. And then younger Bastida gets a major decision over the ranked Josiah Hill to make it a 31-9 dual victory for the Cyclones. I would have to look back at our predictions, Jacob, but I think we were pretty darn close there.
Yeah. I mean, we knew that Dresser was going to take out some of the top people, get them rested, and the younger starters were going to get more reps. They need to, like Evan and Anthony and Cody. Even Will and MJ, they all got their reps. I'm surprised that Younger went in, you know?
Yeah.
But that's just me. But maybe
I think the more matches, the better. Yeah, that's exactly what I think it is, Jacob. I think Younger Bastida just wants to get as many reps against heavyweights as he can right now in the early season so he can really get a feel for the weight class. Mm-hmm. If that duel happens, you know, in February, maybe he doesn't wrestle. But you know, another notch in his belt, another ranked win on his resume. So good stuff there. And then we get to the controversy in the last duel of the day at Collegiate Duels. Iowa State set to take on Cornell in a top 10 duel meet. And it's, you know, we talked about all the fantastic matches in our preview, and then they don't happen.
Yes,
maybe one, two of them happened, but there were supposed to be eight ridiculous matchups in this one.
Okay, so for this one, wasn't it at like 6 o'clock or something like that? Yep,
exactly.
Okay, so I did watch this one. The other two, I kind of went and spotted because I was...
Because they were during the workday? Because wrestling tournaments during the workday these days, apparently.
I may or may not have put my phone on like and watched it during rush hour, so don't do as I did. I was trying to watch, but you know, this one I did. I got my iPad because, of course, my 1-year-old daughter gets to take over the TV. But besides the point, my manhood is gone, but at least I had an iPad and I was watching it. And I'm like, okay, you know, this is going to be really good. And then I saw nobody from Cornell was coming out. Like, it was almost like they were retreating. And I think that is BS. Complete BS.
Yeah, it was the biggest thing for me was the lack of transparency. I mean, it was very clearly protecting seeds, right? Because it was the higher ranked Cornell wrestlers sitting out in every one of these potential ranked matchups at spots where Cornell could only benefit. They sent the guy like Chris Foca or Luis Fernandez. But it, you know, there was no Brett Unger, who lost in this duel meet last year to Iowa State's backup. Vito Arruja was the one that I understand with him trying to make the Olympic team. Maybe you don't have him wrestle three matches, but against ranked opponents. But still, Cornell's coach Mark Gray to say, yeah, they all got hurt in the pit duel. How the hell are you not talking about an investigation into the Pitt Panthers if they hurt four of your top ranked wrestlers?
Okay, so what happened? I think I know exactly what happened. So Kyson lost, and we knew we weren't going to see Rougeau. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that all made sense. But what turned the tides is when Cornella lost to Etchemandia, and Etchemandia made Vince look bad. At 13-4.
For the second time in a row.
All of a sudden, I think that Cornell's coach was like, nope, you know what? I'm done. We're not going to send these guys out. And so David Carr couldn't get his revenge match. You knew David Carr was coming after him.
Mm-hmm. Cody Chittum didn't get a chance against Meyer Shapiro, who is Cornell's stud true freshman.
Yep. So like everything went awry when that 141 matchup didn't go Cornell's way. They kind of like threw the white towel in. And I think that's absolute BS. And what I have, here's where I think NCAA can do a lot better at. You must register your team, varsity team. If you don't get like a backup behind there, let's say like, or, you know, blah, 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 or so-and-so, or when you put it out there, then you can be DQ'd from that. Or,
well, that's the thing, Jacob, this collegiate duels, they let teams bring 15 guys, so that they wouldn't have forfeits if guys actually did get hurt. But Cornell abused that and said, hey, we're going to pretend our guys are hurt, even though they're clearly not. They all, I think three of the four of them, won their matches by major decision in the previous duel against Pitt. So clearly they were fine.
Well, I think there should be some type of penalty. I really do.
Yeah.
Or you just don't bring your guy out there. If the guy is registered down in there, you can have one varsity guy, one starter, and that's it. If you can't, then, you know, too bad, so sad. That's the way it is. You would really take a medical forfeit if somebody was hurt. But for this kind of BS to come out, especially a top five matchup, and for them to puss out, I think that's absolute BS.
Yeah, and like I said, at some point you've got to have pride. If you are just protecting your seeds and doing what you think is best for your wrestlers for NCAAs, then just say it. Just say that, hey, this is the way what the system incentivizes. If I'm the tournament director and I'm trying to sell subscriptions and sell pay-per-views like they were doing at this event, why the hell would I ever invite Cornell back? Why would I invite Cornell back to the CKLV when they didn't put Vito Arrujao out there? Their best wrestler, their superstar. They're not bringing the star power. So, I think it is really hard to legislate because you certainly don't want to be putting wrestlers in the position where they are legitimately hurt and, you know, you're incentivizing a coach making them wrestle. But on the other hand, what are we doing if this sport's all about, you know, being tough and stuff like that, and people won't put their foot on the line? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think there should be a difference between understanding when a person is hurt and then also, you know, the threshold. That's what I would call it. The threshold between what is right and what is wrong. And what Cornell did was wrong. They did not want the competition. They did not want the heat from Iowa State and whatever. Cool. But going into a top five matchup, everybody wants to see it. And then you puss out. Like, that's, to me, that's absolute dog crap. And that's how you make the sport look bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And then to lie about it with the injuries, just hide behind that as an excuse is terrible. But I do want to talk about some of the wrestling in this matchup. Kyson Tarakina, not his best match, going against Greg Diakmahalis, who was Cornell's backup. Kyson's winning that match and then gets elevator to his back and stuck. Not a good ending. Really hope to see a better weekend out of Kyson next weekend. At 125, he's got some big opportunities. 133, Evan Frost gets the win over not Vito Arrujao. 141, Anthony Etchemendia with another nice win over Vince Cornella with bonus points. 149, Zach Redding gets a win. So, you know, I like Zach Redding. Obviously not his optimal weight class, 149, but he can still perform there. 157, yep. Cody Chittum gets a 14-point major decision, so almost the tech fall. David Carr, 165. Man, and that's the other thing. You can say you're protecting Julian Ramirez by protecting his seed for NCAAs, but you are doing the absolute worst for Benny Rogers. That is neglect as a coach to send Benny Rogers out there against a pissed off looking for revenge David Carr.
And he did not hold back against Benny Rogers. Like, you could tell that he was ticked.
Yeah. Yeah. It did not look fun. 174, MJ Gaetan gets a 10-7 win over Benny Baker. 184, Will Feldkamp dropped an 8-7 match to Chris Foca. And that's where, you know, Foca, obviously a dangerous wrestler. It would have benefited Iowa State to send Caleb Helgeson out there instead. They didn't need this one for the duel. They could have, you know, had Helgeson lose by major decision or tech fall, and it does not change the duel outcome. But Iowa State puts their guys out there. Cornell only does when it's convenient. So, unfortunate there that Will Feldkamp is going to get hurt in the seeding despite placing way above Chris Foca at the CKLV because he decided to step out there. 197.
I think this was kind of like a testament to Iowa State and their staff saying, you know what, screw you guys. We're going to send all of our starters out and make ourselves look better. And they did look better. Like, when recruits look at that and they say, why didn't they go against the best?
Yeah. Fans.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and I'll tell you,
this was the talk of wrestling the next day, and one team, one program looked good and one program looked terrible.
Yeah. I am very actually happy. Yes. Will Feldkamp lost, but to puss out like Cornell did, I think everybody was mad, and it made Iowa State look even that much better. And I guarantee you, many recruits, many fans, many just random bystanders will see that and see that Iowa State does not back away from a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. 197, it was the true freshman McCray Hagerty out there against U23 world medalist Jacob Cardenas, returning All-American. And Hagerty, it's a 0-0 match after the first period. Hagerty chooses down and gets pinned in a crosswrist tilt. So some good there with obviously being right in that match through a period. But then some really bad. The bottom position has been a struggle for Hagerty, and I think it's one of the reasons that he's probably going to be kept in redshirt here at 197. Dresser did say today that there will be wrestle-offs at 197 at some point. But I'm not sure what exactly that is going to look like. He didn't go into any details. So it will be Broderson this weekend. And then Younger Bastida finished things off with another win over Luis Fernandez. A bit more anticlimactic from last season, but he does it again, 6-3. And I think his takedown ratio is like 52-1 or something like that right now. So
I like that ratio a lot.
Yeah, that's one of those where if you give up one more, there's like no way to get it back.
And you know what the funniest thing is like the one takedown was at the very beginning of the season. And I think he was just gun ho and just got caught underneath at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a bad shot pretty much off the whistle to start the season. So
yeah,
kind of funny there. But that is Iowa State's collegiate duels. They're up to number 5 in the dual rankings. If you look at Flo and Intermat, which I do, the coaches' rankings don't really mean much to me because, like any sport, the coaches' rankings are not as good as the people who do it for a living. But yeah, any final thoughts on collegiate duels, Jacob?
No, I think we covered everything. We covered in what we thought of the Cornell duel. I'm still have a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. In fact, I think that Cornell should be in the back in the 15th ranked, and Iowa State should be in like the top 4 or 3 because, you know, Cornell couldn't handle the heat.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not exactly sure where they are at, but Iowa State currently trails Penn State, Missouri, Iowa, and I believe Nebraska is the other team in front of them in both of those rankings. So they're going to get a shot at Missouri, who was in a barn burner of a duel last night against Virginia Tech. So there's going to be some fun.
Came down to last match, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Missouri lost 4 out of the first 5 matches and won 4 out of the last 5. And the one they won in the first 5 was having their backup pin All-American. So that was a really good duel on Flo.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Missouri to actually come back to Iowa State because I think that's a big, big, big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get too ahead of ourselves, Iowa State taking on Arizona State on Friday and Cal Baptist, their first Big 12 duel of the season on Sunday. So future Big 12 opponent and a current Big 12 opponent. That dual meet Friday going to be taking place at Hamilton High in Chandler, Arizona, a little bit outside of Tempe, which is a weird location. But the reason for that is Arizona State said, hey, we don't want our meets on the Pac-12 network because that thing is dead and it's impossible for wrestling fans to watch. So they moved this one off site. They're like, hey, it's technically a neutral site duel and, we're going to sell the rights to Flow Wrestling. So then Flow Wrestling was going to get the rights and then wrestling fans could watch it. Well, Pac-12 Network surprisingly decided, hey, we don't want that to happen. So this dual meet is still taking place at the high school, but will still be on Pac-12 Plus. There will be a link to it in my preview article. Cyclone Wrestling also tweeted out a link to the stream. Not clear yet whether or not you will have to pay, but there will be a way to watch it, supposedly, if it works. I've had many issues trying to watch Pac-12 streams in the past, Jacob. So
thank God it's dead soon.
Yeah. Yeah. We're almost there. Almost there. But 7 p.m. on Friday night, Iowa State taking on the A top 25 Arizona State team, not as good as they have been in the past, but there are still some hammers on that team, and there are going to be some phenomenal matches there against the Sun Devils.
Yeah, it's not the same Arizona State team like it was last year, but you've got some of the marquee names that I would call it, and that are still wrestling and putting on a show, and I think there are some really good challenges from some backups and from our heavyweights. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. 125, Kyson Terracina, currently sitting at number 23 in the rankings. Man, 125 is the biggest mess of a weight in the country this year, of the last decade, possibly ever. But both Flo and Intermat agree, Kyson Terracina is the 23rd best wrestler in the country.
Hey, you know, unanimous. That's what I call it.
He's going to be looking to improve that, taking on a top 12 ranked Richie Figueroa. Figueroa was the CKLV champ 2 years ago, 14-0 last season, and then ended up not getting the spot because they had Brandon Courtney, who was a NCAA finalist, who ended up winning the spot from him in a very tight competition. So Figueroa really has some good wins on his resume. But then you look at last year in the duel, he only beat Caleb Feasley 7-5. So I think we saw Kyson Terracina and the wrestle-offs have a larger margin of victory than that. And then I really hope it is Figueroa that we see, because he was injured, missed some time at the beginning of this season, and then at Midlands actually injury defaulted out of his first match. So I really hope he's healthy and that Kyson Terracina gets a chance here to beat a really good opponent.
Yeah, he needs to get back on the right foot. He the CKLV and even the collegiate duels, he kind of took a beat off the path. He doesn't look the same like he did at the beginning of the year, so I'm hoping that he can get back on track.
Yeah, we need to just somehow, we need to get him like some rec specs that make everybody look like Eric Barnett or something like that, because
yeah,
he's got to figure it out for the Cyclones to make a serious run at a trophy this season.
Yeah, the time clock is ticking for him, so he's got to realize that, and I hope he does, because like you said, Iowa State does need him very, very much so to get the trophy.
Yeah. 133, Evan Frost is going to be taking on Julian Klebov. Klebov was a really big recruit out of Jersey, I want to say, and kind of surprised a few people when he chose Arizona State. Since he got to Arizona State, hasn't really done much until last summer. He made the U23 world team and beat some really good wrestlers on the way to earning that spot to represent USA. And then this season, Klebov has been sort of all right. He was the 3 seed at CKLV, should have been in the semis against Evan Frost, but he got upset before he could get there. So we are finally seeing this. Klebov ranked number 22, Evan Frost the top 10 guy. So you favor Evan Frost, and you just hope to see more evidence that he has the whole wrist tilt thing figured out.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to get another quality win.
Absolutely.
Under your belt.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, especially as a redshirt freshman, just, you know, solidifying, I am consistent at this weight class. I haven't just had one or two good wins. I'm stacking them up. So,
well, yeah, and not to mention, as a redshirt freshman, you know, it's kind of like the girls that I have at coaching, I send them out to as many ranked, you know, state qualifiers, ranked opponents as much as possible, because wrestling mediocre or below average girls will not get you far. But when you wrestle those state qualifiers and the, you know, ranked state placers and even champions, you eventually, you know, sharpen yourself and sharpen your skill set. And, you know, Evan Frost is only a redshirt freshman, guys. You got to remember that. So going out and getting these quality wins or quality wrestling, you know, matches will help him, you know, greatly when he goes into the national duel or national tournament. So,
yeah, Yeah, absolutely. Just getting that feel as much as you can. Right. 141, Anthony Etchemendia is on a one-way track to bonus points. Arizona State is thin at this weight class. They have Emilio Weisiger, who they pulled out of redshirt last season, and then he qualified for the national tournament, I believe. Had a couple nice wins, but didn't have that good of a postseason as they were hoping when they pulled his redshirt. And then they have Jesse Vasquez, who upset Casey Swiderski in the dual meet last season. Vasquez got hurt at the beginning of the year and sounds like he is still out. I haven't seen official probables yet, but it does sound like Cody Foote is going to be the guy. And he's only 5-13 in his four seasons at Arizona State. So if I'm that guy, I'm not looking forward to Anthony Etchemendia.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate deal for Arizona State, you know, going, man, I feel actually bad for Cody, because sending out against Anthony Etchemendia, that's a tough task.
Yeah,
it really is. So yeah, I look for Etchemendia to really rack up the bonus points, and you know, that would be a really nice, you know, if something does go wrong with Evan's match or Tyson's match, look for bonus points in there.
Yeah, for sure. Zach Redding going to be the guy at 149, like we mentioned, without Casey Swiderski healthy yet. And what a task for Zach Redding. I believe he'll get Kyle Parco, the three-time All-American of Arizona State, who beat Swiderski 4-2 at the CKLV. The only question mark is Kyle Parco took a loss at Midlands last week, and then medical forfeited out of his second match. So I'm not sure exactly what that was about, but it sounds like he will be there for the Sun Devils. And man, what do you want to see out of Zach Redding taking on a top four guy while he's just filling in?
Being competitive, not, you know, just giving up the tech fall, but you know, Kyle Parco is a monster if he does start and is healthy. But you know, I expect Zach Redding to be competitive. If Zach Redding does beat Kyle Parco, it'd be a surprise, but it wouldn't be like a, oh my gosh moment. It's just like Zach Redding was a national qualifier, guys. This isn't crazy, you know, crazy thinking.
Yeah. He was a win away from All-American status.
Yeah. So I don't see him being an easy match, and I think Kyle Parco knows that too. But do I see him winning? I don't think so, but I wouldn't see him losing badly.
Yeah, Parco is an interesting style in that he's got this stuff to really light up the scoreboard, but tends to be more of a counter wrestler, and he's just really, really nasty with his, you know, reshots and some of that stuff that he can do, but he doesn't necessarily force the action as much as some of the other guys in this lineup. So,
well, that's Zach Redding too, if you ever think about it. I mean, what's his name from you and I? Zach wrestled him.
Biscaglia.
Yeah, Biscaglia. Yes. Both of those guys are big time, like, defensive wrestlers. And Zach Redding actually does a lot better with defensive wrestlers than like the constant attacking, you know, almost berating them. He doesn't do well with that, but with defensive type of wrestlers, he does a lot better job at that. And that's kind of his style too. He'll get into like a single leg or a fireman's carry or something like that, and that, go into a little bit of a scrambling mode, and yeah, he's pretty good at that.
Yeah, he's pretty comfortable there. So excited to see that one. Cody Chittum going to be get another chance at a really good opponent here in Ja'Cory Teamer. Ja'Cory Teamer was a 2-time All-American, took a medical redshirt last year. I think he tore his labrum or something right before the season started. And then this season I think he got a concussion in his first or second match. So some rough injury luck for Ja'Cory Teamer and the Sun Devils, but he's back. He took second at the CKLV and won the Midlands tournament. So, he's, I don't know that he's back like he was before, but he's certainly really solid right now. He looked like his old self at CKLV, I thought, not so much at Midlands. Midlands, it kind of seemed like he let guys into matches. And that's where I think Cody Chittum is a dangerous matchup for him, because Cody Chittum has that unrelenting pace.
Yeah, this would be such a great win for Cody. I think he's had some unfortunate events happen to him in matches, and to get that type of win would really help his confidence, number one, and number two, just his status and seeding.
Yeah, and that's something else I want to talk about with Cody Chittum. He really feels like he is in a similar spot to Casey Swiderski from last year, mm-hmm. where both of them, you know, lost to a top three guy from Iowa in the dual meet by a couple of points in really, really close matches where it was easy to see them winning. And yeah. then they sort of didn't have as many opportunities. They got opportunities against like the elite guys, but they didn't get many opportunities against like that 10 through 20 range where they can build their resume and sort of work their way up to wrestling against getting wins against the elite guys. So Cody Chittum's, while we know he has tremendous potential, he doesn't have that much of a resume right now.
Yeah. Well, I would also say that I hope this is the flip flop between the two, because Swiderski came out guns a blazing and then kind of tapered off at the end of the season, where this one, you know, Cody was hurt at the beginning of the year and is kind of amped up a little bit and went down just a touch. But I really think that Cody has more in his tank, and maybe he's just trying to figure out his way in the collegiate lifestyle or collegiate wrestling style. But I'm hoping that, you know, everything will start clicking to him in the second half of the season, which you see a lot of wrestlers do.
Yeah.
Especially in February and March.
Yeah, absolutely. So big opportunity for Cody Chittum there. David Carr going to be taking on Chance McLean. McLean transferred in from Oklahoma State because he was not going to make the lineup there. And, you know, that's not a good recipe for who someone you're sending out against David Carr, because David Carr has never lost to someone from all but a very select number of schools.
Yep. And I don't think this is going to happen again. So good for Chance to go and transfer to get starting position. Bad news is now you have to face David Carr. So
yeah,
so just saying.
Yeah, we're getting to the point of the duel where I think Iowa State can really separate, because I love David Carr's chance to get bonus points. We talk about Enchiman Dia getting bonus points. Then we get into MJ Gaitan taking on Kyle Valencia. Valencia was an NCAA qualifier last year, but he had a losing record in doing so. So he's certainly not separated from MJ Gaitan. I would say Gaitan has a much better wins at this point in their careers, and Gaitan's going to be favored. It's just a question of, you know, as much as I do, Jacob, Gaitan can put himself in a hole in matches that make it hard for him to come back and get bonus points when he probably should be winning those matches by bonus points.
See, this is where I don't get it. MJ Gaitan will, like you said, put him into a bad position, but then all of a sudden in the second and third period, he just flips a switch and just does amazing takedowns. Like, nobody can stop him in the second or third period. And he continuously makes the takedowns, but then he's like 2 points or a point short. Why don't you do that at the beginning? And then, you know, at the end of the match when they're tired, then do loosey goosey 5 point moves, because you know that you can get out of those positions, because we know MJ Gaitan has a freaking tank because he has to come from behind constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really interesting how it seems like he goes for more feet to back stuff early, and then he's like, okay, that's not working. I guess I'll try my next best stuff, which is my single legs. And it turns out his single legs are way more high percentage. Who would have thought? And just actually really good at taking guys down.
Well, yeah, he does such an amazing job with the single legs, or even high crotch. My goodness, he has a beautiful high crotch and just takes him down. And for some reason, he's just so adamant about not doing it until like he's behind. And I wish the coaching staff would tell him, look, if you want to do throws and everything like that, let's do that later. Your takedowns are so much better and they look so much better when you're doing it than doing these loosey goosey moves.
Yeah, they look clean. And I think you're right. I think a lot of that feet to back stuff is going to be higher percentage once you wear guys out. So we'll see what the strategy out of MJ Gaetan is there at 174. 184, Will Feldkamp going to be taking on a ranked Tony Nagrone. And Tony Nagrone was down at 165 last year. He got teched by David Carr. And he has like one or two so-so wins that are really keeping him in the rankings. He's got some bad losses this year so far, folks.
Yeah, I think if we get far enough ahead, Caleb Helgeson might get the starting nod. But maybe Will come out there and say, hey, no, I need a couple more quality wins.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe he wants to put on a show. So we'll see there. And then at 197, it sounds like Brodersen's going to be the guy. It sounds like he is healthy after missing the collegiate duels. But Arizona State just doesn't really have anyone here. They have three freshmen or redshirt freshmen on the roster here. And they're like a combined 1-7 this year. They're just thin at this weight. And it's interesting because Arizona State's recruiting was so good for so long and has helped them turn into a perennial top five, top eight team at NCAAs. But it seems like that has tapered off a little bit.
Yeah, I just think that we're kind of a little bit spoiled right now with Dresser getting like constant talent after constant talent, you know. And Arizona State, yes, they have a great program, but you know, unless you've got something that's special that you can constantly recuperate losses from your lineup, you're going to have this type of, you know, drop off at times. So, you know, this is normal, especially at wrestling, you know, schools. You might have a great lineup, but like three or four of your weight classes could be your final weakness.
Yeah, it ebbs and flows for sure. So I like Julian Brodersen there. I mean, he beats kids and I feel like Jacob, he wrestles completely differently when he knows he's better than a kid. When he has doubts, he's much more tentative and not nearly as offensive. But against a freshman like Arizona State's going to send out, I feel like he's going to let it rip.
Yeah, he lets it rip with the kids that he knows he can beat, but I think he's just not confident enough when he gets against top 20. I would say the top 20. All of a sudden, he turns into like a 180, a completely different wrestler, and I wish he would just keep the gas pedal going, you know, put the gas pedal down and go.
Yeah, for sure. And that brings us into 285, Younger Bastida. This is going to be a fun one, Jacob. It sounds like, and at least what Flow Wrestling is reporting, is that Colton Schultz will be making his first folk style match appearance of the year this weekend against Younger Bastida.
Ooh. that's going to be tough. I mean, imagine this, Sam. You go out your first meet or your first match and you go, oh, by the way, you're going to go against a guy named Younger Bastida, and he's top three in the nation right now. He has picked up a 285-pound man by one arm. Good luck with that. And Colton Schultz, he's no slouch whatsoever.
He's an animal. I mean,
yes.
Colton Schultz sat out the first part of the season because he's very likely going to be USA's representative on the Greco team for the Olympics, but they have to qualify that weight first. So that's what Colton Schultz spent the first semester preparing for. He's now going to be the guy that America sends to the Pan Am qualifier. So Colton Schultz controls his own Olympic destiny there, which I think is what he was really important to him in the beginning of the season. But now he's a little bit focused on this folk style season and putting on a show in front of the home fans. Colton Schultz, He's gone fourth, second, seventh at NCAA. So a ridiculously good heavyweight wrestler. He's never been beat by a Cyclone, but it's always close, Jacob. Last year, he beat Sam Schuyler 3-2. And then 2 years before that, he wrestled Gannon Gremmel twice and beat him in sudden victory at NCAAs and beat him in tiebreakers in the dual meet. So it's like, we got to get this guy has our number. We got to get him at some point.
He hasn't won against a younger Bastida.
That's absolutely true.
And it's going to be a really interesting, different contrast of wrestling. You've got younger Bastida, who is an absolute animal when it comes to just the quickness and the explosiveness when he takes shots and even just defending shots. Then you got Colton Schultz, who is just a pure, how would you describe him, Sam? The best one word, you know, phrase.
He's a, one word, I would say powder keg, maybe. He's definitely shorter than younger and, using up all of 285, I would imagine. And the thing about Schultz is he, because of that Greco background, obviously he's got some, really good lifts and stuff in his repertoire. But the biggest thing that I notice in from his Greco background is how positionally solid he is, because he does not, you know, you're not going to get him off balance. It's so hard to get him off balance. And he can still move pretty good too for his size. So, that's why I think it's going to be a very intriguing matchup for younger Bastida. He has not had anyone as good defensively as Colton Schultz yet.
But Schultz has not had someone. Well, yes, he's had like really good guys, but he has not had explosive guys like Bastida is. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could put Gable Steveson in that category, but yeah, Schultz lost that match. Like, that's not fair to say that just because he wrestled him, it's a good sign for him.
No, but like, I'm also saying, like, besides Gable Steveson, which he's on like on a whole different echelon of wrestlers, like, he's probably going to be like in the Hall of Fame for life because of what he has done. But I would say, like, there is Stevenson on like the upper echelon. Then you've got younger Bastida that has similar traits to Stevenson. Bastida has similar traits. So then what is that going to entail, and how will Schultz defend that? Like, I don't care. Like, I don't care how strong or how powerful you are. When Bastida turns the corner, oh my gosh, it's like a fish out of water for all these heavyweights. They don't know what to do at that point, because Bastida has been wrestling the 197 pounders, and those are like Greek gods. And they're just like, they're freaks in nature. And then all of a sudden he goes, okay, by the way, I'm going back up to, you know, 285, and I'm going to get leaner from that. I don't know. It'll be a really cool matchup. I think it'll be top 10 matchup. I really do, because I think it's going to be that explosive.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be really good. I've got younger winning that one, and I've got the clones winning the duel 26-9.
I have 23-9, so we're really close on that one.
It's hard to see a path there for the Sun Devils to win this duel meet, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't see, with all their weaknesses like we talked about, I just don't see the Sun Devils really getting a good footing a good foot in the door at this one.
Yeah, I agree. And then, so that is Friday at 7 p.m. on Pac-12 Plus, like we mentioned. On Sunday, Iowa State heads further west out to Walnut, California to take on California Baptist in a Big 12 dual meet. Second time wrestling the Lancers, first time at their place, but it's not really at their place because for some reason they're having this duel at Mount San Antonio Community College. I looked it up. I don't really know why, because Cal Baptist put almost 5,000 fans in the house for their first home duel of the season. But maybe they just want to tap into that Los Angeles crowd a little bit. It is a bit closer than the Cal Baptist campus. Not really sure what's going on there. Either way, Cyclones, anybody, anywhere, as we've seen this season, and they absolutely have the Lancers outgunned here.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see anybody on their roster that could really put a good fight against us. I mean, maybe there's going to be like, I mean, we can go down the list real quick. And
yeah,
and
yeah, I do want to talk about 125 because Eli Griffin snuck up and got Kyson Tarakina at the start of last season in a 4-2 match. I think Griffin had 2 takedowns in that match. So Kyson's going to have to be on his A game in that one. Griffin also just made the Midlands finals and was 1 second away of riding time from winning it in regulation and then goes on to lose it in tiebreakers. So that's going to be a tough one there for Kyson and another test to see if he is back to himself.
Yeah. If let's just say this, if Kyson isn't the same person, I would highly think that Dresser would be doing some real big thinking on that weight class, because what Kyson needs to show up on these, you know, the second half of the season.
Yeah, and that's what was interesting in Dresser's presser. He said 197 is really the only weight that's under contention right now. 125, it sounds like not an issue. So Kyson Tarakina must be showing some good stuff in the room. Hopefully had a good training period here over the break and is ready to show it this weekend, taking on two really tough wrestlers. 133 is probably the other strong part, or the next strongest part of the Lancer lineup. Hunter Leak pinned Zach Redding in a cradle last season. But that's still, I would not pick Hunter Leak. That's his best win of his career is over Zach Redding, and he has not really done much close to it other than that.
I thought that I kind of remember when he wrestled Zach Redding, and I felt like it was a tad bit fluky, but that's just me. Cause I think Redding was doing something and he got that cradle and got the pin. And I was like, dude, that never happens to Zach Redding, especially to non-ranked wrestlers. So I thought that was really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a weird result, but I like Evan Frost to take care of business there. The interesting thing about Cal Baptist lineup to me is that they are, you know, one of the mid-major schools that has made the transfer portal work for them. Or I guess you can't really say work because it's not translating into wins or hasn't translated into a national qualifier yet. But they definitely improve their depth and improve their lineup with the transfer portal. 141, they brought in Darren Green from Wyoming. 149, they brought in Dane Morton, who started at Nebraska last year. So that could be a fun matchup since Swiderski's out, Redding versus Morton. And then they got Drayden Morton, the younger brother at 157, who trained at Minnesota last year, which is interesting because Chittum trained at Minnesota briefly. So I wonder if those two ever cross paths.
That'd be really interesting to see if they did. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Not gonna lie. Somebody answer that question for us. Somebody ask it out there in the, Riverside, California area. Get us an answer. 174, Justin Phillips is transferred from Buffalo a couple years ago, and then he brought in their 197 pounder Eli Sheeran this year. And then 184 is another Nebraska transfer in Nathan Haas. So they've got a lot of guys from other schools that they're like, hey, come here, get mat time and see what we can make happen. 285 is an interesting spot for the Lancers too, because Chris Island, who's been their heavyweight since they became D1, got hurt in their last dual meet, or they had a couple duels on the same weekend, and he got hurt in the first one, so they ended up forfeiting the rest of them. I'm not sure if they have anyone else available if Chris Island is still hurt. Not sure Younger Bastida is going to get a match there.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I think
it results in the same amount of team points either way, though.
Yeah, I just would like to have Younger, you know, still. It's not good to get not have matches. Like, it's good to continually have matches, especially in a different weight class. So, you know, would it be terrible? Not necessarily, but it also is not great for Younger. Like, it's good to have those type of reps, especially in the bigger weight classes.
Yeah, that's fair for sure. I thought this would be a good duel to get some other guys some reps too. But not seeing probables, I'm not sure who else Iowa State is bringing. Dresser mentioned they had 10 seats on the plane, so it might just be the same 10 for both duels. We will just have to see. But I've got Iowa State winning this one big. I think Kyson Tarakina turns a corner and gets the win. I'm going to go 41-0 Cyclones.
38-0 for me. I'm being a pessimist this week. But that, you know what? I'll let you be the optimist.
Yeah. All right. And this was like, 38. I know Cal Baptist had 9 points in this dual meet last year. So despite what I would consider an improved lineup, I don't think it's going to show on the scoreboard for the Lancers. Iowa State set to take care of business out west this weekend. Jacob, any final thoughts on these two duels?
Not much. I just think that, really awesome matchup at 285 with Bastida and Colton Schultz. And there's just some really good matchups. And then it's kind of going to Big 12 territory, get Cal Baptist, get those two done, and start progressing into the season, because it's going to get tougher after this.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing I forgot about this Cal Baptist dual meet, it will be on Flow Wrestling 4 p.m. on Sunday, but Cal Baptist has done a live stream on YouTube for all of their other duels. I don't see one set up on the CBU Lancers YouTube page right now, but it could go up later, so keep an eye on that if you don't have Flow Wrestling and want to watch the Cyclones put a whooping on a Big 12 foe out west. But it's shaping up to be a really good weekend of wrestling. I'm so happy to see the Cyclones back in action.
Me too. It's been too long. I think this is a great break, because if you remember last year, Sam, they were going like tournament, meet, duel, tournament, meet, duel, you know, and consistently going after like the top 10, top 15. And I think that actually tired them out. So, you know, I think Dresser took a little bit of a different pathway, got him a nice little few weeks of, you know, turkey, a little bit of ham, a little bit of mashed potatoes for their Christmas, and got them back to work. And let's see if that really pays off for the Iowa State staff.
Yeah, there you have it, folks. This has been the Sudden Victory Podcast, presented by Wide Right Natty Light. For Jacob England, I'm Sam Phillips. Thanks for listening.
Go Cyclones.